Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
There's a worst-case scenario brewing with the Colorado Rockies that you may need to sit down to hear. John Heyman of MLB Network tweeted yesterday, Stoke, quote, "The Rockies are said not to have the budget for any big signing at the moment. So barring some big change, there won't be an extension coming anytime soon for superstar shortstop Trevor Story."
Depressing. I mean, it's just, what do you want me to say? It's awful. It's this worst case scenario. When you don't think it could get any worse, it just does in a big way.
Yep.
So we're going to have Trevor Story on the team this year, and the Rockies are going to stink, and he's going to be gone next year. And we're going to get, you know, a third-round compensatory, whatever you want to call it, type of pick for him because he's leaving in free agency. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, what do you want me to say, right? It's awful.
It is literally the worst-case scenario.
By far.
Because as much as I resisted your idea to trade Trevor Story, given the nature of this fact, okay, that John Heyman is saying that they do not have the budget for any big signing. So that's we have to accept that as truth. Now what? You've got to do what's best for the organization, for the name on the front of the jersey. And unfortunately, the crippling reality is that to get something in return, outside of just a, you know, like you said, a compensatory pick, outside of that, I mean, Trevor Story's going to walk out the door, and that's going to be that. It's like, you know, it's not the same, but it reminds me of the Orlando Magic in, you know, 1996. That Shaq looks like a generational talent. The organization did not want to make him a $100 million contract back then. The sticker shock of that was just the owner at the time just was refusing. And they didn't get a deal done, had hoped to. At the end of his tenure, he just walked away for nothing. Generational talent, just walked right out of the door. He went and signed with the Lakers, made history, becomes a Hall of Famer. But that's similar to the structure here in Colorado. And it's just so sad.
Well, here's the deal. You should have had a decision on Trevor Story months ago. That's the problem. It's either we get a long-term deal done with you, and if we can't afford it, we can't afford it, okay? And if he doesn't want to, he doesn't want to. If either one of those things is true, okay, take a step back and say, now we must trade Trevor Story and accumulate young talent and maybe some big league talent, whatever. I don't really care. Get something good in return so I can look at the next, you know, 3 years from now and have hope that, you know, this guy's going to be the next great player here. We have no young talent.
At least pretend.
Right, right. And so now you're traveling down the worst path you can go, a point of no return that's going to end very badly for the Rockies, not for Trevor.
Going to end great for Trevor.
He doesn't get paid a whole lot of money.
Yep. And he's going to no longer have to play for the Rockies, who seemingly can't rub two coins together right now.
That's a bad deal, man.
It's really, a really, really bad deal.
I mean, you look at the when you don't have, like you've talked about, the owner with a B in front of his name in a $1 billion world.
Yep.
And those teams are the teams that can go out there and make moves and not really worry about the bottom line. Then you get stuck in these situations to where you give away Nolan and give away 50 mill and you have a guy like Trevor and you're going to watch him walk out the door. And it's even more frustrating, Zach, because we look across the pond over there, the river, the state line, and we see the Padres in the sunshine.
New owner.
And their owner is just making it rain.
Their old owner was in the same tier as Jeff Breidich. If you pull up the net worth of all Major
Jeff
League
Breidich, base, when did he buy the team?
I'm sorry.
Did he just buy it from Dick Monfort? Wow. When, getting stranger and stranger.
Welcome to Rockies land. When you look at the net worth of all Major League Baseball owners, Dick Monfort is in the bottom five or six. The old Padres owner was in that same tier. Now they have new ownership. He's worth $3 billion. He's
got three of them things.
Three of them things. And so with a promise to earn more, because they're going to go from like 14th in attendance to probably top six or seven. You know, people love rooting for a winner.
Yeah.
It's always nice out there in San Diego.
Oh,
they're going to go to the ballpark.
Stop it.
A lot more than they were.
Well, of course. I mean, you got the buzz, right? You got the buzz of the $300 Machado, the $300 million Tatis. You got, you know, I mean, all these free agents you've signed. I mean, it gets people's attention.
Yep.
Like, oh, we're really good.
Yep.
Let's go.
Yep.
Crazy. Crazy.
You, Darvish? No problem.
Nah, we got that. Let's make a trade and take on that contract.
Blake Snell?
Oh, yeah.
No problem.
Come on over here, buddy.
Come on.
Let's go. I'm worth three of them things. I got this.
Eric Hosmer?
Ah, yeah.
I'll take care of it.
Yep, got it.
It's really sad.
And it hurts. It hurts. And, you know, we've only been here, you know, a short time compared to a lot of Rockies fans.
Sure.
And it hurts us.
Right.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine being there from day one and you're seeing the Padres now just outspend you and you're looking at your organization giving $50 million away to take your best player? I mean, think about that.
It's historic for all the wrong reasons. And let me just say this. You know, everyone's different, okay? So I'm not speaking on behalf of, you know, anyone. But I could use my imagination and correlate it with some of the stuff that I've seen in reaction. It actually may hurt us more than lifelong Rockies fans. Because lifelong Rockies fans are used to getting their heart ripped out. They're used to being disappointed by the organization. And there is a huge portion of this fan base that is apathetic. And that is the worst characteristic that you can have towards a sports fan, that or a sports organization.
Apathetic.
Apathetic. That you've just been let down.
You're numb?
You're numb. The definition of apathetic is showing or feeling no interest, enthusiasm, or concern.
A lot of them are like that right now.
There's an ice box where your heart used to be. Someone should write a song like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. It's just not good. You know, we've really... You know, I've been here since 07. I haven't always been the biggest Rockies fan. You know, I didn't love baseball. Well, obviously liked it.
What changed in that? Because you became like, you watch a, like me, you watch them every night.
My son loves baseball.
Okay.
So I begin to love it even more. And then, you know, once I started doing radio, now you're paying attention to obviously all the sports and what's going on. And I just, you know, I love the Rockies. I don't know. I just kind of, and we would be down there at Blake Street Tavern and, you know, got games going on. It's like, and then they had some good squads, right? You know, since 16, 17, you know, they had some really, so you just kind of, all right. And you're winning ball games and you're in the playoffs and doing those things. It gets exciting. And now here we are and I'm looking at it and like, wow, it's going to be a long road back. And how close we were to just being a consistent winner and having a team that you could just look at and say, look at that lineup. Boom, 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 boom. Look at this. And now it's all just falling apart so quickly. I mean, just so quickly in a blink of an eye, we go from, you know, playoff game or whatever with the Dodgers to see who wins the West.
Yeah, right.
To making the playoffs a couple years. Yep. And then now it's, you know, collapse after collapse the last couple years, and it's just a complete disaster. There's no other way to spin it, and it hurts. Stinks. It's a bummer. I like sitting on the couch listening to Drew Goodman. And
Jenny Kavner.
Watching the Rockies game. But now, I mean, how am I going to get myself to really be invested in the Rockies this year? How?
I can think of one or two ways, but not really from a natural rooting interest standpoint. All right. Okay. Is what it is.
I don't even have that young guy.
I do have one more statement to make that I've never made about the Rockies, and I'm going to make it later in the show. Say it right into this microphone.
Mm. Got to be curious. You making another big prediction?
No, but I'm asking for something to happen.
Oh, you are?
Mm-hmm. We'll get to it. Sometimes when you're in the middle of history unfolding, you may not fully appreciate how it will be remembered. I think that's what's happening right now with the brightest star in Denver sports. We'll tackle that with Matt Moore coming up next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
What we're seeing from Nikola Jokic right now is nothing short of history in the making, in the most literal sense. Jokic has a 37-point triple-double last night in the against Milwaukee on the second night of a back-to-back, a game in which they ran the Bucks off of the floor, a Bucks team that was coming off a signature win, had won five consecutive games, and has the reigning MVP. But that guy was not the brightest star on the floor last night. That belonged to Nikola Jokic. And to discuss it more, our Nuggets insider Matt Moore joins us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Matt, I'm running out of ways, and it's getting exhausting trying to quantify just what type of season Nikola Jokic is having.
Yeah, and what's crazy is, you know, it's not just the numbers. You watch, and he's making the impact night to night. He's controlling the game in a way that very few players ever do. He's been just incredible carrying this team all season, and it's not just every now and again. It's night to night you're getting this version of Nikola Jokic. You know, the Celtics broadcast the other night when they played the Celtics were making comparisons to Larry Bird. Like, it's crazy how far he's come, and every single night he just continues to absolutely dominate the NBA.
Matt Moore joining us here. Matt, when you look at the Nuggets, kind of not the best start to come on here as of late, about to be the All-Star break. What are you expecting to see out of this group? Hopefully they get a little bit healthier. What are you expecting to see out of this group post-All-Star break?
I think they've probably stabilized a little bit. I think if you look at the record, three early losses to the Kings, who we know that they're a better team than, that really is the difference between where they're at and where they were supposed to be in the eyes of a lot of people. They figured out a lot of things. Michael Porter Jr. has made real strides over the last, 3 weeks or so. They're starting to get the rotation figured out, even though they've had to piece it together. I expect them to be active in the trade market looking. I don't know if there will be a deal, but I think that they'll just kind of continue on at this pace. I don't think there'll be big ups or big downs, and they should be a dangerous team come playoff time again, because we know that that's when they play their best.
Matt, you talked about at the trade deadline they might be active. What would you like to see them, or what do you think they might want to add?
I think they need a wing defender that can hit threes that's a veteran. They need somebody they can pull off the bench that they don't have to play small ball as much as they have. PJ Dozier's done, I think, a great job when he's been healthy, coming off on and playing, you know, at small forward at times. Even though he's kind of naturally a point guard, he's picked up a lot of those duties. But they need somebody who is a veteran they can trust in the playoffs to be able to come off and defend at a high level. They're lacking those kind of guys. Zeke Nnaji has done a really good job for a rookie, but he is a rookie. And so they need one more wing defender who's not an offensive liability. I think they'll continue to look for those kind of opportunities at the deadline.
Matt Moore, the Action Network, dropping by here on Stokely and Zach. I want to circle back to Jokic real quick. When, you know, you hear stuff like, hey, Jokic 50 career triple-doubles, joins Wilt Chamberlain as the only centers to reach the milestone. Wilt did it in 703 games. Jokic has done it in 416 games. The difference between that is the equivalent of 3.5 seasons. And when you say that his 50 triple-doubles is more than Kareem, Bill Russell, Bill Walton, Shaq, Patrick Ewing, Tim Duncan combined, when you start seeing this stuff on social media, hearing it on the broadcast, it's being put out there on television, and it's like quantifiable and digestible for average fans, should we expect to see Nikola Jokic's name be floating near the top of the MVP conversation?
I mean, I think it's there. It's been there. A lot of people in the league have strongly felt that he's been the best player. They think that, you know, whether he'll continue all the way through or whether the voters will select him are different. I think the Nuggets are going to have to finish with a top four seed for him to get a serious chunk of votes, but he's going to get votes anyway, whether it's first, second, third. He's going to finish on the leaderboard in votes because he's just been incredible night to night to night. I do think that, you know, the Nuggets flying under the radar as far as starting off kind of rough, and there'll be other stories like Utah and Phoenix. Those stories have taken away some of what he's deserved in terms of recognition. I think the lack of national TV games has influenced that a little bit, but I do think that, you know, we were talking about this last night on the Locked On podcast, that I just don't know how many players have played better basketball, just basketball, than Nikola Jokic this year. And it's really been incredible to watch every single night.
Matt Moore joining us here. Matt, Jamal Murray here lately is really cranking it up another notch. What do you make of him and, you know, here lately, how he's been playing?
Yeah, you know, they got him a full 2 days of rest, and that seemed to do the trick for him. He finally got healthy. He's doing a lot better in terms of the health. A lot of his shoulder issues and hip issues have kind of gone away. He's played like the Murray that you expected. Everyone was like, well, I guess he's just, you know, where's Bubble Murray? Where's Bubble Murray? Well, it's been here the last really 3 weeks or so. He's been just cranking out 20-point games every single night, shooting efficiently, not turning the ball over. His defense is better. Murray's been playing at a really high level. His ability to punish teams when they're trying to figure out schemes to counter Jokic, and then Murray starts picking them apart. You can just tell these teams are just like, what are we going to do? That combination of those two is incredible. But Murray, on his own, and last night he had some incredible shots versus Milwaukee. He's one of the best shot makers in the league when he's on, and he's on more often than he's off these days.
Matt, I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball here and ask you a question. And obviously, it's a decade-long question, so I'm obviously not going to hold you to it here. But Nikola Jokic turned 26 just the other day. Giannis Antetokounmpo is also 26. Giannis has more recognition in terms of MVPs. I got it. But if you hit the reset button right now on March 3rd, 2021, and I said, who would you rather have for the next 12 years? Who would you pick, Giannis or Nikola?
Oh, that's tough. I think you can build a top-flight championship team with Giannis. The playoff troubles, he's contributed to them, but it's been a lot of factors and a lot of matchups that have gone wrong. I do think, though, that most people would probably say, well, Giannis because of the defense, but Jokic's defense this season has been pretty good.
Yep.
And the numbers kind of bear that out. The number of defense has been fine when Jokic has been on the floor. And the way that he is able to just master the offense in terms of if you double, he's going to tear you apart with assists. If you bring single help, he's going to absolutely torch you. If you play small, he'll score in the post. If you play big, he's going to spread you out and hit from range. You know, Giannis doesn't have all those counters. At this point, I think Jokic is a more unguardable player. I'll say that. I think that they're equal in terms of what they can accomplish. And over 12 years, Jokic doesn't need the athleticism
right
that Giannis does.
Right.
So I do tend to lean towards Jokic every single year is going to be getting better and better and will continue to probably, you know, be a great player. That's what's really crazy is how good he already is. And his long-term career projects exceptionally well.
Yeah. And like last night on the broadcast, you know, I'm listening to the Milwaukee broadcast, and like, you know, 7 of Giannis's 9 field goals are dunks. And yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm not taking away that there's a certain quality, his ability to get to the rim, even when defenses are trying to wall him up. It's great. But I'm like, are you going to do that when you're 33? Like, and Jokic's game, although he had 3 dunks of his own last night, I never saw that before, but it's not predicated on athleticism, and I think it's just going to age better. I don't know. I know on its face, a lot of maybe average fans would, you know, pick Giannis and maybe even scoff at the question, but I think it's legitimate. All right.
Yeah, I think when you look at also just the fact of this is the thing is, you know, this is how it is. People that watch the league night in and night out, that's a much closer question than I think the casual fan is ready to realize.
Yeah. All right, Matt, we'll leave it there for now. Great stuff. Matt Moore, Action Network, dropping by here on Stokely and Zach. We appreciate your time, and we'll see if the Nuggets can get a win against the Pacers and close things out for the All-Star break. And I know after the All-Star break, we'll be sure to catch up with you down the road. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Talk soon, guys.
All right, there he goes, Matt Moore. I think it's a good question, man.
No, yeah, it's interesting once you say it. And then you kind of give why. I think I would lean towards Nikola also.
Yeah, he can play every night below the rim if he wants. I have never seen him.
The lack of a shot at all from Giannis. I mean, that's just scary. And that's why I have a hard time projecting them, to be a champion.
Right.
And you got to be able to hit some shots. You just got to.
Interesting conversation. We'll circle back to it a little bit later. But I have a question. Should the Broncos add to the tight end room? The perfect candidate may have just become available. I want to bounce a name off of you coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Broncos add to the tight end room. The perfect candidate may have just become available. You know what I'm talking about here, Stoke?
No, I really don't. But I'm interested.
After 10 seasons with the Minnesota Vikings, the team has released Kyle Rudolph.
That's right.
The move is going to save the Vikings $5 million against the salary cap for 2021. He's 31 years old and is set to become a free agent for the first time in his NFL career. He's probably not a number one option anymore, but that works out because we don't need that. We have one of those.
Yeah.
I just don't know, you know, Albert O, is that your number two? Probably, right? Is that your second tight end?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's the plan. I mean, obviously he's injured, so that's why I kind of hesitated there because but I think you saw enough in Albert O last year is that's your plan moving forward into this year. Now you evaluate what he looks like going into year two. I would say yes. Right now as we sit, my plan is Noah Fant 1, Albert O 2, and who else do we have? You know, I don't know, Troy Fumagalli, Jake Butt. I mean, just give me another one.
Nick Vanette.
Andrew Beck.
Yeah,
one of those guys are going to be your third guy. Let's have a competition out there and see.
Kyle Rudolph has never been some sort of all-world player, but he's been rock solid for a really, really long time. He's played in 140 games. He's older, but he's not too old. He's 31. You're not going to ask him to be the number one. And I think the question mark about Albert O, whether he's going to have real success in the league, first and foremost, but also coming off a major season-ending injury, combined with the just status of the rest of the group.
Because Vanette's gone.
Andrew Beck is probably going to be gone.
I don't know what his contract situation looks like. I mean, they liked Andrew Beck, right, because he could play fullback. He could be that H-back type of guy, and he could play tight end, just kind of a jack of all trades. Now, he was hurt a lot last year.
Yeah, he's still under contract for, it looks like a cheap amount, like $850,000.
Yeah, so he's probably
he's
here.
He's not going to be here.
Or at least, you know, in training camp here.
There's no dead cap number.
But Vanette, you look at his contract, I mean, it's a $3.5 million cap hit with only an $875,000 dead cap hit. So that means he's gone.
Right.
He didn't do enough last year. I mean, not even close to what we were hoping.
No. Nope. So with all that stuff combined, and where's Kyle Rudolph coming from?
Minnesota, Great Lakes, Lake Michigan, Superior, Erie.
You know, the nickname for
Ontario.
Minnesota.
What else do we have? One more. Isn't there five, six, seven, how many, seven or eight of those things?
The Great Lakes?
Five, seven?
You got Lake Erie.
Yeah.
You got Superior. Lake Michigan.
Michigan.
You got Lake Superior, which is the biggest, I believe.
Ontario.
Lake Ontario. And one, there's five.
Starts
like
with an H.
Big five.
Huron?
Huron. Yeah, Lake Huron. Yeah.
Got it.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
But Minnesota,
uh-huh.
The nickname for Minnesota,
right,
is the land of 10,000 lakes.
That's
because
right.
Because there are literally just lakes everywhere.
All over the place. Right
all
in the
over
of the
road.
Place. There's a lake.
Right? You got to drive around it.
You got to drive around it.
Or over it. Oh, man.
So he's coming from Minnesota, obviously, George Payton.
There you go.
Mm.
And for a tight end to stick around that long, there's got to be a good relationship there.
Sure.
You know, positive, you know, you look back positively, you've spent 10 years with an organization.
You see the statement they put out about Kyle Rudolph. I mean, just glowing. You know, Mike Zimmer, their general manager talked, the head coach talked, Mike Zimmer, and their general manager talked in it, and just glowing, you know, about his 10 years there and how much he's done on and off the field and model citizen and all these great things, right? So, yes, he's highly thought of in Minnesota within that organization.
Rick Spielman is the GM, right? That's who taught George Payton a lot of what he knows. He said, Kyle and his wife Jordan have made an immeasurable impact on our team and community that may never be matched. The energy they have invested in the community, most notably through the end zone at the University of the Minnesota Mason Children's Hospital, is truly remarkable. I admire Kyle, and we will miss him and his family. We sincerely wish him the best. They don't have to put out anything.
No, not yeah. And if you do, you can just keep it vanilla. But obviously, they feel they really like him and what he's brought there and meant to that organization and that city,
yeah,
state.
I would not be surprised at all if George Payton picks up the phone and calls Kyle Rudolph just to add depth. Because there's been two.
He's a big guy. You know, he's probably not the same pass receiver that he once was, more of a blocking guy. But he adds some depth there. I don't know what that contract would look like. For me, I would say let's pass and keep going down this road with our younger guys. But if you want, if it's a 2-year, $6 million deal, something like that, okay. But I don't want to start wasting cap room on Kyle Rudolph.
No, I don't think he would cost a lot. I really don't. I don't think he would cost a lot. He played 12 games this past season, had 28 receptions, 334 yards, and just one touchdown. But it'd be adding, it'd be adding a veteran presence into a
sure.
really young, inexperienced room where, you know, this guy's had a lot of success in the league. He's played in 140 football games. He's caught nearly 50 career touchdowns. He has seen a lot. He has seen a lot.
I'm not completely against it. I'm just not all on board with it. If it's a right price, okay.
It's the right price.
If not,
I'm not saying overpay for Kyle Rudolph.
Kind of sounded like it for a little bit.
No,
so
no,
clarify
no.
That.
I am not trying.
Let's
to
Let's go all
overpay.
In and cut Von Miller, and so we can have enough money to sign Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah.
Right. No. Let's
cut Noah. Move forward with Kyle.
He's the future.
No, no, no. But if it's for the right price, I think he makes sense for the room.
He does. You're right. I mean, it's a veteran guy that's been around, and those young guys can lean on and learn how to be a pro. So I'm not totally against it. I'm just kind of hesitant. Let's see what that contract would look like.
Got a couple of good questions right around the corner. But we'll start with this. Very simple. Did Nolan Arenado, and I'm stealing this from Patrick Saunders online for his old Denver Post mailbag.
Yeah.
Here's the question.
Uh-huh.
Did Nolan Arenado betray the fans in his final act in Colorado? I want to bounce that question off Troy Rank coming up next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
All right, question that I am admittedly stealing from Patrick Saunders' mailbag that he does for the Denver Post. I saw the tweet and I said, huh. And it's an interesting question. I want to bounce off Troy, and I think I know where Stokely falls on that. I think we can circle back to Stokes' response here in just a couple minutes. But, Troy, first of all, thank you for joining us. Our Denver 7 Broncos Insider presented by ROX Heating and Air. That's ROX, ROX Heating and Air. Did Nolan Arenado betray the fans in his final act in Colorado, Troy?
Betray the fan base?
Yeah.
No. I don't think so. He signed up for a thing that when he signed the contract, it was with the promise that they were going to build around him. Was he naive in believing that? I would say that's fair based on their history, on how they treated Troy Tulowitzki, even Todd Helton, if you want to go back to then, as their highest paid players and how they built around them, air quotes. But in Nolan's case, when Breidich confronted him after the 19th season and has tried to lay blame on him for their team being terrible when Nolan wasn't a pitcher, it just fractured the relationship. I mean, when you can't trust the word of the people you work for, I mean, you don't stay in it for the fans at that point. I mean, I understand that, you know, it's hard on fans, but this is about a business. And if the person that hired you and is your boss, you know, basically lies to you and treats you a certain way that's, you know, counterintuitive to you performing well, you have the right to one out. And he did. And he gave them a fair out a year before to get a really good trade with the Cardinals. They would have had a much better trade a year ago, and they chose not to trade him. So the fallout from this mess, I would say, is like 99.5% on the front office and 0.5% on Nolan.
Troy, looking at the J.J. Watt contract, and I disagree with you there, but that's just kind of, you know, difference of opinions there. The J.J. Watt contract, got the details today. It looks like 2 years, $28 million, 14 a year with you know, $3 million in incentives. What do you make of that deal, 14 a year, and how do you look at it compared to where Vaughn's at and maybe what they might ask Vaughn to do with his contract?
Yeah, you know, I'm talking to sources about that this week, Brandon, that it doesn't impact how the Broncos would make a decision on Vaughn. Not necessarily, but it does provide numbers and some context that J.J. Watt turns 32 this month, as does Von Miller. They've been in the league almost identical. Their sack totals are similar. Watt's been hurt more, but he's a two-time defensive player of the year. Vaughn's coming off a major injury that forced him to miss a season. And he's, again, same age. So $14.5 million, is that a number they would go to Vaughn and say, how about make that your base instead of 18, and you can get a million back with 10 sacks, 12 sacks, 15 sacks. So essentially you can claw almost all your money back through sacks and incentives. And would Vaughn do that, or would Vaughn just say, you know what, I see the J.J. Watt contract as the floor, not the ceiling, and I want to take a bite at the apple in free agency. And he might decide that. Because, again, once they ask him to take a pay cut, if they do, they have to be prepared for him to say no, and then he will walk. So the fact that there has been no resolution tells you that they're still considering bringing Vaughn back. I've said it's 50-50, but there's probably going to need to be some elasticity here. I just don't see him coming back at $18 million. I don't see that. And if it doesn't, will that then spell the end? Because he just decides, you know what? I want to go take a bite at the apple in free agency because I think I can get more than J.J. Watt and I can pick where I want to go.
Troy, I won't hold you to any answer here, but what's your best guess of what happens if the criminal investigation is still open by the time that the Broncos have to make the decision on that $7 million a check he would receive here in like, I mean, that's like in just, what is that, 13 days, 15 days, something like that from now?
Yeah, the decision is required on March 16th on the $7 million option as part of his $18 million salary in 2021. In talking to sources, Zach, it's my belief that there will be resolution on Vaughn's case either this week or next week.
Okay.
And so my belief in talking to sources is that it would be resolved before March 16th. I can't say that with full certainty, but that's what I'm being told by people I trust, that they expect resolution before March 16th. And people say, well, it took forever in the investigation. How could it be decided that quickly? It's in different hands now. It's in the DA's hands now.
Right.
It's not the investigation. It's the DA having to decide whether they should file charges based on the evidence. And you don't file the charges as a DA, especially a first-time DA, if you don't believe you have a case that you can win. I mean, you don't make a habit of, you know, filing charges with unwinnable cases. That's just not the way this works. So I would expect, to answer your question, as we sit here today, that there would be resolution on the off-field issue before March 16th. I don't know that for certain, but that is the direction it's trending, according to people I've talked to.
Troy, what's your best guess on what happens with Vaughn? Do you think the Broncos say pay cut, or we have to release you? Do they do nothing and let him play out his last year? Do they do an extension? How do you just best guess right now as we're sitting here on the third? And obviously things can change. But what would be your best guess here with Vaughn Miller?
Best guess would be pay cut, work with us, and if not, then cut him and he becomes a free agent. I don't see the extension thing. I don't see that. I mean, you look at George Payton, he's trending younger. Would they like to run it back with Vaughn for a year? Yeah, but, you know, every dollar counts as they're kind of trying to build everything. And then Vaughn's side can argue that you don't really need the salary cap room, especially if they don't bring back Kareem Jackson. Then they wouldn't need the salary cap room. So would he be, like, you know, insulted that why are you asking me for a pay cut? You don't need it as a cap. And
right.
They would be saying, well, this is the player we think you are at age 32 coming off injury, and that's the rub. So my best guess is they see if they can give him a haircut, and if he's agreeable to that, and say, and he's, you know, desires to finish as a Bronco and where this is a legacy player, and they work it out. Or the flip side is they ask him that and they can't get to a comfortable number, and Vaughn's like, you know what, I just want to be a free agent, and they cut him. Those are the two most likely scenarios for me. And I don't know. Like I said, although it's been kind of 50-50. It could go either way. They need him. He'd make them better. But, you know, could they move on from him and sign somebody else for $10 million or $9 million in free agency that, you know, a Leonard Floyd type? They likely could. And that's kind of the argument here is, who is Vaughn now at 32? I've been a ride-or-die guy with Vaughn forever. I think he'll bounce back. But what does that look like? Bounce back at 9 sacks, 10 sacks? I don't know that anymore. And that's the problem. And they're not a contender. This would be an easy decision if they were a contender.
Right.
We never expected after Super Bowl 50, when we all said Vaughn's going to finish his career here, that they wouldn't make the playoffs again and have 4 straight losing seasons for the first time since the 1963-72 drought. So the fact that they're not a winner complicates the decision and makes it uncertain, because they don't have to bring him back necessarily, because it's not like he's the missing piece to a Super Bowl.
Troy, first of all, great point. I made that 2 days ago, saying that, like, hey, you know, is Vaughn Miller, and I've heard Mike ask the question in the morning, is Vaughn Miller going to be a part of the next great Broncos team over the next, you know, 2 to 3 years? And I just don't think that that's the case. So I think that the organization should move with that in mind. Not like a defeatist attitude, but a recognition of where we're at here. Like, there's a reason we are where we are. There's a reason George Payton's here and Elway has taken a step back. So I think that should be seriously considered in this conversation. But I got to ask you about Nikola Jokic, Troy, because last night he notched his 50th career triple-double. He joined Wilt Chamberlain as the only centers in NBA history to reach that milestone. It took Wilt 703 games. It took Jokic 416 games. The difference between those two numbers is 3.5 seasons. He now has more triple-doubles, Jokic does, than Kareem, Bill Russell, Bill Walton, Shaq, Patrick Ewing, and Tim Duncan combined. Is he the greatest Denver Nugget right now?
Yeah, I got asked this question earlier today, and the only reason I would say no is two things I brought up in the morning show. One, David Thompson's the best Nugget I've ever seen in terms of or Denver professional basketball. He was Michael Jordan before Michael Jordan. And so he has a different level for me in terms of just pure talent. And then Alex English on those teams with Kiki Vandeweghe, with Calvin Natt, with Fat Lever, with Dan Issel, those were great teams, and I think Alex played 11 years in Denver. So really, for me, Jokic is going to be the best player in franchise history. He just needs to do it probably two more years because of the body of work of Alex English. If you go back and look now, Alex was probably admittedly a one-dimensional player,
right,
pure scorer, but he did it for a long time. And it's not easy to average 27, 28, 29 points a game over the course of a decade. And so Jokic will be. I'm hesitant to say it. He is right now because he's just still, let's see, in his fourth year, fifth year. He just needs a couple more years, and it's going to be very obvious that he's the greatest player in Nuggets history. But he's doing things that no Nugget's ever done and no Nugget will ever do again because of his ability to pass as a big man. You just don't see that skill set in the history of the game. You don't see a big man pass the way he does, because usually they're so good at scoring, why would they pass? It's the, you know, the black hole, the ball comes in, it doesn't go back out. He's unselfish as a big man who can score. And Wilt's case, he was just almost bigger than everyone for so long. He was just a marvel and a freak athletically. Jokic is not a freak athletically. What he is a point guard in a seven-footer's body, and we've just never seen that.
It's crazy. I marvel at it, I'm running out of ways to articulate just what we're watching.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.